But yes, so we are looking at this parable of Jesus, the parable of the lost son, or the lost sons, as we're calling it. And again, we said last week, it is really well known. Again, Matthew, meeting people who haven't read it is always encouraging. There's still the shock value sometimes, but often we're unshocked by this parable. And often because we stop halfway in a lot of our readings. Again, children's Bibles inevitably stop midway through this parable with the story of the younger son we looked at last week. That's the son who asks for a share of the inheritance, moves to a far-off country, spends it all in wild living, then comes to his senses, returns to his father, and is embraced by his dad, even though he does not deserve to be called his son. But again, I hope you saw last week, if we finished the reading at verse 24, that Jesus is just about halfway through this parable. Jesus has more to say to his audience in this parable than just that first half. And it's the older son we're thinking about this morning. And it's the older son, actually, I have found myself returning to more and more in recent years. My eyes were first opened to this by a book by a guy called Tim Keller called The Prodigal God, just showing why the older son's absolutely key to understanding Jesus' message in this parable. Because we saw last week, if you were here, Jesus speaking to two groups of people in Luke 15. Look back at verse 1, and we discover those groups of people are tax collectors and sinners, and verse 2, Pharisees and teachers of the law. And we suggested, actually, that those two groups of people stand for the two sons in this parable. So the younger son we looked at last week in the first half stands for the tax collectors and sinners, people who know they have messed up spectacularly. They do not keep the Jewish law. They work for the Romans. They just do whatever they please. And in that sense, they are very like the younger son, Jesus says. And Jesus' message to them last week, we saw, was come to your senses. Come home to your father. You will be amazed at the welcome you'll receive. The shock for them is the father's not going to turn them away. Because of Jesus, the father is going to welcome them home and honor them as his children again, even though they have done so much wrong. But then he has a message for that second group as well, the older sons in the crowd, the Pharisees and teachers of the law. And I believe it's this older son that is such a warning sign, both to Jesus' original hearers and to us. Because the older son is in this parable to show us how a relationship with God, with the God of the Bible, can go badly wrong. How actually it can become just twisted and cold. Jesus wants to warn us through the older son, just as he wanted to warn the Pharisees and teachers of the law in his day, of a completely wrong way of relating to God and to other people. So we've seen that in this parable, Jesus, he's painting this picture of a dysfunctional family. And if you thought the younger son was dysfunctional in his relationship with the dad, almost Jesus says, wait until you meet the older son. So as with last week, again, with a familiar story, it can be helpful just thinking through what this story means. So what I want you to do is maybe in twos or threes or in bigger groups, whatever you're comfortable with, just turn to maybe one, a couple of people near you and just work through these kind of questions, just kind of making sure we've got this story and the detail of it in our head. So this is looking at verses 25 to 32. What do we learn about this older son from this parable? Okay, so you're gonna just turn in groups. Again, could be twos, threes, could be bigger. Do that for the next, say, 5 or so minutes, then we'll come back and feedback as to what you've discovered, okay? Okay, hope you've had a bit of time there to think through this character of the older son. So things you were discussing in your groups then about, I mean, that first question kind of trying to set the scene when we first meet the older son. That's the easy comprehension one. Where is he when his brother returns home? And why is that significant? So where is he and why is it? Sorry? Yes. So in one sense, you know, he's in the field working. And it's actually, again, I want us to see, I mean, by taking a bit of time in a parable, we race through parables. I want to see that Jesus is an astonishing storyteller. Because just that little detail says almost everything we need to know about the older brother. The younger brother swanned off, spent all the money, made a mess, comes back, What's the older brother doing? He's in the field working. He's kind of doing what a good son should do. So as he comes home, here's the celebration. His hands are muddy from being in the field. And so he responds to the news his brother come home against that sort of background. So from this conversation the older brother has with his father, what do we learn about him? How does he feel about his brother, first of all? Just some thoughts on that. Yes. We go, remember, this is a huge celebration that's going on, and it's all for who? It's for the younger brother who's made a mess. So resentment is a very good word for that. Yeah, Andrew. Yeah. That's it. That's really helpful. So in one sense, his brother saw the excitement. The older brother's at home doing fairly maybe boring, tedious work, but he's thinking about maybe at least that fattened calf over there might be for me. Maybe that's going to be sort of a celebration for me because of my hard work. And then he comes home, fattened calf is an ex-calf. He's dead. He's being eaten by other people. So He's maybe thinking his brother's had all the excitement. He's had none. Anything else about his brother, particularly before we move on to the father? Say again, sorry? Throwing his toys out his pram, Yeah. Again, that sense he refuses to go in. That is, you can see that in a toddler. You can see that, but you can also see that in an adult, can't you? The sense of, I am not going in there. If this is for him, I'm not going in there. So throwing the toy at the pram, again, resentment's that word again. And what about how this brother feels about his father? So actually, straight away, once you get the sense he doesn't trust the father, he doesn't respect the father either, going, what's dad done now? But there's a sense of actually he thinks he can tell the father how things really should be. Thanks, Sarah. That's really helpful. Other things about his relationship with his father? Yes. Taken for granted by his father. Yep, really helpful. Beth? Yeah. So there's maybe a sense of loving his father. He is the one who stuck around, and that is commendable, but maybe, has that love kind of grown cold, or it's all about basically what his father can give him. And suddenly his father's giving stuff to his brother. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of similarity there. There is almost the same goal for both brothers. They want to get the inheritance. One goes about it by doing the very unusual thing of saying, can I have it while you're still alive? The other brother does the more usual thing, but nonetheless, he's still going to get the inheritance by sticking around, by biding his time, and then he will get that inheritance. So again, they're maybe a lot more similar than they like to think. Yes, Matthew.
Speaking about the boy's loving father, I don't know, he's covered love.
Mm-hmm.
Just loving what he can get.
That is a big question, isn't it? Is there a sense that neither of them really get the father? I guess the question then becomes, does the younger son at the end of the story, does he understand the father better as a result of how his father has related to him potentially? We're going to think more about the father next week, but it's a big question. What does it mean to love the father in this story? That's really helpful. I mean, anything else to add on himself? We've kind of talked about that, this resentment, feeling hard done by toys at the pram? Anything else about how the older brother feels about himself? Paul. Yes. 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 So it's almost here, don't you know who I am? You know, the sense of actually, don't you see? You're almost like, look at my hands, they're muddy from working in the fields, and yet you're doing all this for him? So he does, there's a very strong sense he feels better than the brother. Again, we sort of see that actually the way he talks about him, don't we? So there's that sense of, you know, in, where is it, verse 30? Really significantly, again, this is Jesus' master storyteller. The older brother can't even call the younger brother his brother. He goes, this son of yours comes home. There is absolutely, he wants to distance himself as far away from his brother as possible. It's not when my brother comes home, it's this son of yours comes home. So he really thinks he is different, set apart from his brother. So yeah, so again, to summarize really what we've been saying then. So I think resentment is a really helpful word that Jill used and Rob used. You, the older son, he resents his brother. His brother has swanned off, had all this fun, comes back, is welcomed with open arms, literally, and the older brother is angry about that. He wants justice for how he feels. The older, younger brother has treated his father, maybe, but more importantly, he wants justice for himself. He wants the celebration about him, not about his brother. And as a result, then suddenly you kind of discover that on the outside, things looked very good for the older brother. On the outside, he was doing what was right. He was in the fields working, and you would say, looking at you, which of these brothers has a good relationship with his dad? Well, clearly it's the older one, the one who stuck around. But actually, Jesus says, you scratch under the surface, and the older brother reveals himself to be deeply resentful of his father. He doesn't trust his dad. You can even go as far, there's almost an element of almost, does he hate his father by this stage? He just is so angry about what his father has done. And again, there is that sense of how he thinks of himself. He feels sorry for himself. He feels he has been hard done by. That great line about the young goat. He goes, you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. As a kid, I always thought, how do you celebrate with a young goat? But again, a very cheap animal to kill, have a short meal with your friends. He says, you didn't even give me that. Now, obviously, he's actually wrong. And the father points it out in verse 31 when he says, everything I have is yours. The older son, as the eldest, had every right to take a young goat and kill it and eat it with his friends. But the older brother, he's so angry right now. He's feeling, you just deny me everything. It's not just reasonable things. That's just anything, even unreasonable things. A young goat, you didn't even give me that. When actually he was perfectly free to have done that. It was just how cold and hard he's become towards his father. And hopefully we get to the end of that conversation with the father. We sort of see why Jesus devotes this time to the older son. Because the older son in this parable, he is a portrait of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law in the crowd. Again, why do these picture Bibles end at verse 24? Because that is a happy ending. It is almost the happiest ending we could imagine. An ending worth celebrating. The minute the older brother comes in, it becomes a lot more complicated. And it's a lot less happy. Because you look back at verse 2 of Luke 15, we read, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered against Jesus, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. So again, there's a huge crowd gathered around Jesus, but the Pharisees and teachers of the law, they don't celebrate that. They don't go, great, loads of people are taking God seriously finally. No, they say, doesn't Jesus know who these people are? They don't deserve this sort of treatment. Why is Jesus spending time with them when he could be spending time with us? So in part, Jesus tells this story to explain to the Pharisees and teachers of the law what his tactics are, why lost people matter to him. He tells the story of the younger son to go, look, I want to find these people and welcome them back. That is why I'm doing that. But also, in that second half of the story, he wants to expand the definition of what it means to be lost. To be lost, says Jesus, isn't just those big, dramatic rejections of God. It can be very subtle, almost invisible. but at its heart, there is a lack of love and trust and just relationship with the God that Jesus has come to reveal, with the Father in this parable. So both the sons in this parable, Jesus says, are lost. Both sons need the Father to come out and reconcile them to himself. And the big twist in the story is at the end of the story, the younger son seems to have got that. The younger son seems to understand who the Father is and why he needs him. The older son, as Graham said earlier, he's left outside. We don't know what the older son is going to do. It's sort of a cliffhanger at the end. How will the older son respond? So again, the older son, he is a picture of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, of their pride, of their resentment, of their bitterness towards anyone who hasn't quite lived up to their standards. At bottom, he's a picture of basically how their relationship with God has gone wrong. And I'd love to stand here this morning and say, now we understand what the story's about. It's talking to the Pharisees in the first century. Shut your Bibles, move on. But actually, the challenge of the older son is absolutely real for any Christian here this morning and anyone who's even heard the message of Christianity this morning. Because there are plenty of older sons among us, and there are plenty of the attitudes of the older son in every single one of us. And if they're left untreated, they'll prove fatal to our relationship with God. So if you bear with me, kind of, we're going to call it older brother syndrome. We've talked about violent illness already this morning, so I hope you can bear with me. But again, so older brother syndrome, how do you sort of spot it? What sort of attitudes demonstrate that you're like this older brother in the story? I think maybe thinking things like this. God is a slave driver. He just takes from me, and he never gives me anything. He demands that I give up things, but he never gives me anything in return. He is a distant slave driver, a boss who's almost impossible to please, but he demands I do that anyway. There's not a sense of his goodness. The Christian life has become just about do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. And it's very hard to love a God that we see in this way. Linked in with that, God doesn't recognize all the sacrifices I've made for him. Actually, we start thinking about it, it's like, well, hang on. I've worked really hard. And I've said no to things that people around me have said yes to. I haven't cheated at work, and yet I get left behind. I haven't cheated in relationships, and yet I don't feel satisfied in relationships. I haven't rejected the gospel, and as a result, people think I am weird. And we think, well, hang on, God's not even noticing that it's hard to live for him. He doesn't see these sacrifices. And so we grumble and we envy other people. And we look around and we just say, God gives other people an easy life, but he doesn't give me an easy life. God answers the prayers of other people. He welcomes back other people. He doesn't welcome me. These are just some of the attitudes we can fall into that bring us very close to the older brother in this parable. I want to say the older brother here, he's a portrait of a heart that has grown cold to the grace of God and is much more common than we might like to think. Again, just the last 10 or so years, I've seen this in myself a lot of the time, and I've spoken to other Christians, some of whom have walked away from Jesus. And it's these attitudes they have described when I've asked them about it. They've just said, I just don't love God anymore. I don't think he loves me. Or I just don't ever get my prayers answered, so why do I stick with this God? Or I just don't care anymore. I just want an easier life. I look out there and it's easier. See, these are some of the attitudes that drive people away from God. And that's why I think this older son is a character I keep coming back to. Because actually, he's a huge warning sign to all of us. We all can fall into these attitudes. And if we do not check them, if we don't recognize that and seek to do something about it, then actually we have a very, very grim future ahead of us. Of at the very best, misery here and now as we follow Jesus, but at the worst, we will just ultimately say, this isn't worth it. And we will walk away. So is there anything we can do? Again, we say this parable ends on this uncertainty. But I want to suggest, actually, Jesus doesn't tell this parable to say, the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you're doomed in this. He ends this parable there because they have a choice. They have this choice the Father sets before them. Come inside or stay outside. We are not doomed here and now to repeat the mistakes of the older son because of the character of the Father in this parable, the God that Jesus reveals to us. We're going to think more about him next week in our final one in the series, but just looking at that Father's response to the older son, we want to see that we need to be very clear. The Father still loves the older son. Again, this dysfunctional family the Father has, he doesn't give up on either of his sons. Again, the Father could have said to his son, you are shaming me in front of the whole community by not coming in. Get out. You're no longer my son. This is a huge public slap in the face to the Father on the part of the older son. But instead, the Father, verse 28, goes out and pleads with his son. He doesn't give up on his son. The way he addresses him is with love. My son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. This is the character of the God Jesus reveals. And he's revealing himself to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. He's revealing himself to older sons. But also he does challenge the older son. He actually corrects the older son. We said earlier on that he cannot bring himself to say that the younger brother is his brother. He goes, this son of yours. The Father, very gently but very firmly, in verse 32, says, this brother of yours. You're not so different. You're not so different. You are both lost. You both need me to come out and bring you in. And the Father is saying that that's what I'm doing. Come inside, my son, to this older brother. Again, this is the picture of God that Jesus wants to leave with his hearers. This is the God who sent Jesus into the world to rescue us. So just as we come to the end of our time, and we'll have a bit of time in groups before we sing our last few songs, but just, again, some thoughts from this parable of how to treat older brother syndrome. I think the first one is really key, and it says, get to know your father. Get to know your father. We said last week, in a sense, this parable is told because we all naturally, left to our own devices, we get God wrong. We just caricature him in our minds. And when you look at the older brother here, he clearly doesn't know his father at all. Neither does the younger brother. They both need the Father to reveal himself in a fresh way to them and say, look, here's who I am. I'm going to welcome you back, younger son. I'm going to come out and plead with you, older son. We need to get to know our Father. Do not lose sight of who God really is. Don't rely on memories or perceptions or assumptions about God. Never presume you know who God is. Keep going back to his word. Why do we read the Bible at Avenue on Sundays? Why do we say we need to read the Bible through the week? Why do we look at parables that we already know how they end? Because we will forget who God is. We always do. That is the human heart. We make God into something that he isn't. So get to know your Father. He is holier than you can imagine him to be. He is more just than you can imagine him to be. And he is more merciful than you could ever imagine him to be. And why do we need to get to know him? Because again, those conversations I've had in the last 10 years have left me with a real conviction. You cannot persevere in the Christian life out of duty. If duty is all you've got, if your track record of doing good things is all you've got, you will not persevere. You will just grow colder and harder because you're losing sight of your Father. The reason any one of us can say we're a Christian is because God loved me so much he sent Jesus to rescue me. Not because I've kept my nose clean. Not because it's the right thing to do. Duty is never enough. We need to know our Father. Jesus didn't die and rise again to give us a relationship with God as our boss a long way away. He died and rose again to make us God's children. So get to know your Father. And linked to that is get to know your family. Again, thinking this morning about the past week we've just had, Graham rightly counseling isolation sometimes is useful in illnesses. Not in this one. Actually, older brother syndrome thrives on isolation. It thrives on that sense of going, no one else gets me. No one else understands the life I have to live. No one else understands the sacrifices I have had to make. And if we sit on our own, keeping other people at arm's length, that is just going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger. We need our family around us. We need our brothers and sisters around us to remind us of the grace of God. That is why God puts us in church families. We need people to say, I have found this really hard too. We need people to say, God has really helped me recently. We need people to say, I'm struggling to trust God right now. That is what Christian family is about. And if we just shut the door and turn in on ourselves, that older brother is going to go bigger and bigger and more monstrous until we just cannot see God's grace at all. We need one another to see that we are similar, that God is faithful, that other people struggle too, other people rejoice too, other people plod on as well. We need one another and to share our lives with one another. And finally, I think a big challenge for us, big challenge for me personally is how do you avoid being the older brother? Get involved in the family business. And what is the family business in Luke 15? It is looking for the lost and rejoicing when they're found. Again, that book I talked about by Tim Keller pointed out that kind of you got the first two parables in Luke 15, the lost sheep and the lost coin. In both those parables, someone goes looking for what is lost. The shepherd looks for the sheep, the woman looks for the coin. In the lost son, no one goes looking for him. He comes home and then is welcomed back. And Keller points out, in the culture of that time, whose job was it to look for that brother? It was the older brother's. He should have been the one looking for his brother. But he doesn't. He just stays at home and grows cold and hard. Again, that is the family business, Jesus says, to look for the lost and to rejoice when they're found, to look for people just like us. That's not culturally, ethnically, financially, but people who are lost just as we are, as we were before Jesus came. Again, as Jesus says, this brother of yours has come home. Look for the lost. That is a safeguard for us to stop us turning in on ourselves in self-bitterness and self-obsession. Get involved in the family business, Jesus says. So this older son, I think he's a huge warning sign to us, a huge challenge to us. And I think we need to be alert to that. So I think sort of maybe even just where you're sitting, maybe just taking a moment's quiet actually, just on your own thinking, what does this older son teach us about a wrong response to God? Maybe particularly those last two questions. Who do you think you're more like in this parable? Next week we're looking at the father. But again, do you think, does it feel a bit more resonant? I think a bit more like the younger son, actually. I think, yeah, that's more me, or the older son. But then that last question, just particularly, I'm going to take a few minutes quiet before I hand back to Matthew. How will you need to change, whether the younger son or the older son, to enjoy our relationship with God as your father? I'm going to take just a minute in the quiet just to maybe just think about that, pray about that, and then I'll hand back to Matthew for our last bit.
Let's pray together. Father, thank you that you love us and that if we belong to you, you say to us, I am always with you. All I have is yours. Thank you that you so loved the world that you gave your one and only Son. Thank you for our older, righteous brother who didn't scoff at us but came to seek and save us. Please remake us in his image that we might likewise go out and seek and save the lost, that we would be gracious, that we would not set ourselves apart, but we would know that you have been gracious to us, and so we could be gracious to others. Father, please help us to think on your kindness to us, and not just think on it, but dwell on it and meditate on it and feed upon it, that our hearts are warmed as by the sun, and that as birds warmed by the sun, we would sing of your kindness to us. Please warm any hearts here that are currently cold. Please break any that are currently frozen. Please help us to rejoice in all that you are for us and for others as well. Amen.